This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Thanks for listening to the Jazz Joe Hall Show podcast. Today on the pod, Canada and the U.S. reach a deal on Nexus. How long before the backlog is cleared? Plus, why is the Chilliwack School District hiring uncertified teachers? And as security threats grow, is it time Canada finally banned TikTok? That's all next on the Jazz Joe Hall Show podcast. Canada and the United States have reached a workaround deal in a dispute over the popular Nexus Trusted Traveler program. The dispute over Nexus, you may all remember this, which allows citizens in Canada and the United States to cross the joint border more quickly. Well, it's generated a huge backlog, 300,000 applicants waiting in the queue to get their applications approved. Canada and the U.S. remain at odds over legal protection for U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers who worked in Nexus offices here in Canada. And now, the Americans want some protection for them, as it's guaranteed in the U.S. for pre-clearance officers at Canadian land crossings and at airports under a 2019 agreement. Now, the Canadian officials do say that the deal itself is not a final resolution, but a makeshift effort to speed up application processing. Joining me now to talk a little bit about the Nexus program is Robert McDowell. He's the founder of Pivot Travel, which is an affiliate of Fair Connect. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Hey, great to be here today, Jazz.
So first of all, your thoughts just on this news. It doesn't look like it's a final deal, but looks like they've got something that is, as I said, is a bit makeshift. But your thoughts on what the announcement today?
I mean, it's better to have some movement on this rather than the full yard. They really have to move on this file, and they have for some time. So it's good to see that they're paying a bit more attention to it.
Now, my understanding is, right now, I think President Joe Biden and Prime Minister Trudeau will be speaking in the next few minutes on a variety of issues as they are meeting with the Mexican leader. I understand that Nexus will be part of that conversation. But the process right now, the key part of that application process, to my understanding, there's two interviews, one by Canada customs officials and one by an American customs officer that have to be completed for the Nexus card. So in regards to what we're hearing right now, it looks like you'd have to go to the border crossing, or sorry, to the airport to have this conversation then?
Actually, the airport Nexus office has been closed for quite some time. Since before COVID, and it still has a reopened. If you go to the U.S. section, you'll see it's kind of this sad ghost of a shell of a Nexus office. So yeah, the holdup seems to be the security that the U.S. Border guards are insisting upon that we have, or the fact that they should be able to carry weapons as they can in the States. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the real sticking point here. So whether they divide the interviews, which they're talking about, so they have the Canadian one in Canada, and then you actually have to go down to the border or go past security clearance at YVR to get it there, that's to be seen.
Yeah, they did talk. I mean, one of the pre-clearance areas, of course, is YVR and many other major cities, major airports across this country. And like you said, it would likely be you going to the airport and potentially going to a land border crossing in the U.S. to do so. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I know it's a program administered jointly, but by far the biggest users of Nexus are actually Canadians.
80% of the almost 2 million people use Nexus, and 80% of those are Canadians. So yeah, that it's definitely popular with Canada, and it's really something that Canadians are benefiting from.
Why has it gotten to this point? And why have we allowed it? Because if it's 80% of us, 80% of the program are Canadians, why have we collectively and our government allowed it to get here in your assessment?
I mean, essentially, it is run by the Americans, so they do have quite a hold on this in terms of the security clearances Canadians have to get. So, and with COVID and with the shutdown of these offices anyways and personal interviews, it's just created this huge backlog. And now not only the 300,000, but every year, because it's only a five-year membership, every year you have another 400,000 people that need to renew their membership. So, you know, we're talking about, yeah, just trying to catch up with, you saw the passport mess over the COVID break and the trying to catch up with the passports. This is a whole nother side of that.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think it's going to take before we get through all of this in your mind in regards to the backlog?
Well, I mean, the nice thing is they do give a bit of a grace period. So people who's, as long as you apply to renew your card, your Nexus card before it expires, they do give you a grace period. And that's started at 6 months. It went up to 2 years. Now it's about a year, but they're not really specifying that. So you can still use that, apparently, as long as you've applied and you're waiting for the answer for your renewal. So, yeah, it's going to be a while yet. I would imagine it would be another year or a year and a half. It depends on how many of these centers and how much of a backlog they can catch up with. I know that a lot of people are getting interviews waived, so they are getting renewals at least. They're getting approvals, and they're just the Nexus cards, happily for them, they just show up in their mailbox.
Oh, wow. So in regards to just if you feel something's coming up very soon or if you at that anniversary level time, a year or less, you should just get the application and just do not wait. It may take a year, but just get it started as soon as possible.
There's no way you should wait much longer. You can apply a year before your card expires. So I would certainly suggest you do that. Take advantage of that. There's no question that a friend had applied before COVID. He just got his card now. So he applied before March 2020. It showed up in the mail. He had thought it had been lost. It showed up last week.
Oh, wow. Well, that is good news. And we're going to hear Prime Minister Trudeau, I understand, has just gotten up, and hopefully they'll get to a question. We'll keep following this story throughout the program. But thank you for your time today, and fingers crossed they get all of this dealt. Thanks so much, Robert.
Exactly. Thank you. Thanks, Jess.
All right. Oh, in Chilliwack, I saw this headline today. I wanted to share this with you. There is a shortage of teachers in Chilliwack. And what it means is that students this year may be faced with a substitute teacher who is technically not certified as a teacher. The hiring of uncertified teachers is nothing new in a lot of northern towns, rural communities, but it's never happened in Chilliwack, School District number 33. Now, the union that represents teachers calls the shortage of teachers extremely disruptive for students. They're concerned in regards to what's occurring in their community. They are asking for the ministry, obviously, to get more teachers trained, but it is going to be a challenge for Chilliwack and many other communities because there's just a shortage of teachers right now. Joining me now to talk about the issue in Chilliwack is Danielle Bennett. She's the president of the Chilliwack Teachers Association. Danielle, thank you for joining us today.
It's good to be here.
A very interesting headline that we read this morning at our morning meeting when we're hearing that the Chilliwack School District is looking to hire uncertified teachers. It kind of caught my attention. Walk me through what the district is going through.
Well, there's a severe TTOC shortage. Those are our teachers on call. And they cover for teachers who are absent due to illness. And there is a large lack of TTOCs province-wide. We've seen in northern districts this has been an acute problem, and they've had uncertified TTOCs in those districts in the past. This is the first time in Chilliwack that we've looked at hiring uncertified people to fill positions in order to have bodies in front of children.
So when you say uncertified, this would be teachers who have finished a university degree but have not gone through the teaching component or just are waiting to be certified?
Generally speaking, these are teachers who have not had any teacher training whatsoever. They do hold degrees as per the requirement of the school district. So they have a bachelor degree or higher, and they have some interest in working with students and children and maybe have had some past experience such as coaching or, you know, youth group kind of things. But they generally have no teaching experience whatsoever. But they are being hired by the school district to fill in for absent teachers.
Mm-hmm. And generally, how long does the teacher training component take for an aspiring teacher after they have the degree?
It depends on the program that they're in, Jazz. So sometimes it can be, you know, a year and a half to 2 years for the teacher training program. Mm-hmm. And so what we'd really like to see the district do is with hiring these uncertified people is work towards getting them into a teacher training program and support them through that. The other issue is that the School Act actually provides a mechanism for the districts to hire uncertified people. This is called the letter of permission process, and our district has not followed that process. So these are actual uncertified people who aren't even being governed by their own regulation through the School Act.
Hmm. Why is Chilliwack dealing with this issue? And you did say it was a province-wide issue, and I understand that. And, you know, it's still part of the Metro Vancouver area, so generally you don't have a problem attracting teachers. Is it just a case of we're not training enough, similar to what our healthcare system, we're not just training enough medical professionals, in this case education professionals, quick enough to deal with the demand?
That's part of the problem. We also had our restored language in 2017 through the Supreme Court of Canada ruling, which increased the demand for teachers, mm-hmm. and the programs just haven't kept up since. COVID also played a role in that, where a lot of teachers may have left the profession due to the uncertainty that COVID brought. And so throughout the whole province, we have not enough teachers. We are also one of the lowest paid BC was one of the lowest paid in Canada. So we're hoping our collective agreement with the wage will help attract new teachers here. So it's all about recruitment and retention, and we just struggle with that here in Chilliwack.
Give me a sense of what the growth has been like in your district. I know many communities south of the Fraser are growing. That's where the growth is, in the lower mainland in many cases. But give me a sense of what Chilliwack's going through in regards to just demand for teachers, growth of schools, that sort of thing.
Well, we always like to say we grow by a small elementary school every single year. So we usually have between 280 and 350 new students every single year, and we just don't have the schools to keep up with that either. So our classrooms are very overcrowded and stuffed full, and now we need more teachers to provide those services for students, and they're just not there.
Mm-hmm. In regards to the challenge specifically with these teachers, have you spoken to any of these individuals who also obviously want to be certified or considering teaching, but are now going into a classroom where they just haven't had perhaps the education yet in a real way to do this? I mean, have you talked to any of these individuals who are heading into this?
We have in our orientation sessions, we have one of our executive members who participates in those and welcomes these new teachers to the district. One of the things we always say is, you know, we need to treat them with kindness and support them as much as we possibly can, because they are in here for the right reasons. They're in here to help the kids, and we want to support them as best we can.
The overall challenge that you said, look, the rural communities are having to deal with this. Chilliwack this is the first time it's had to deal with uncertified teachers. Do you view this as a one-off for this year, maybe the next, but after that you should be able to attract teachers once again, certified teachers once again?
No, I see this as a long-term program. This is a band-aid on a situation that needs some systemic change, and that change needs to come from the ministry and from the government.
And is that just a case of more teaching spaces in your mind?
It's more teaching spaces, and it's also classroom composition, workload language for teachers. It's putting those supports in for teachers and for students. And that's part of it. It's also the wage and the benefits for teachers.
So those are, I guess they call them TAs or teaching assistants, that type of support that teachers need?
The teachers need, we call them EAs here in Chilliwack, education assistants. Mm-hmm. We definitely need those. And there's a shortage of EAs as well, don't get me wrong. I mean, I heard from a school today that was short for EAs. So it is a problem throughout the district with both teachers and EAs. But supports for teachers, too, is the EA supports, but it's also providing the other supports that they need, things like mental health supports in the schools and more counseling services and things that will help to deal with the trauma that the students are facing.
Well, it's a very challenging time, I know, for your district. I appreciate you sharing the story today. Look forward to chatting with you in the future as well. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jazz.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Today, a federal U.S. agency says a ban on gas stoves is on the table amid rising concern about a harmful indoor air pollutants emitted by the appliances. Richard Trumka Jr., a commissioner with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, said all options would be on the table to regulate the appliances, which have been shown to be harmful to both human health and the environment. Now, a December 2022 study in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health found that indoor gas stove usage is associated with an increased risk of current asthma among children. The study found that almost 13% of current childhood asthma in the U.S. is attributable to gas stove use. Think about that for a second. 13% of current childhood asthma attributable to gas stove use. Other studies have found these stoves emit significant levels of nitrogen oxide, dioxide, carbon monoxide, and fine particulate matter. As well, which without proper ventilation can raise the levels of indoor concentration levels to, unsafe levels as deemed by the Environmental Protection Agency. Well, joining me now to talk about this issue is Professor Jose Luis Jimenez. He is a professor of chemistry and distinguished professor at the Cooperative Institute for Research and Environmental Sciences at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Professor Jimenez, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This study for parents, for society who are hearing about this study today and over the last 24 hours, what key message does this send to the public in your mind?
Well, in particular, the news today was about the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission saying that as a consequence of previous studies, they are considering a ban on gas stoves and natural gas stoves. So I think it sends a message, although, you know, such bans may take time, that people should take action in their own hands. And if they have an option to change, to get rid of gas and change to an electric stove, they should do so as fast as they can.
Mm-hmm. For our audience, what are the key findings for you as a researcher? What is the biggest cause for concern for you?
According to the studies that have been done, I think it's nitrogen dioxide is one of the main concerns. There are other pollutants, but in particular, you cannot help when you're burning natural gas in the home that nitrogen dioxide is a pollutant that gets made from the nitrogen and the oxygen in the air when you heat them up. Now, this is a pollutant that's very bad for children in particular. It's estimated that 13% of the cases of children that have asthma are due to natural gas, and it may increase also the likelihood that they have an asthma attack then, not just children, but anyone, and it affects people who can have respiratory issues or can create respiratory issues. So it's just a very bad idea to be breathing nitrogen dioxide in your home when you can avoid it, when you can just get an induction stove and avoid breathing it.
Mm-hmm. In your mind, is this a call for action for government to head in that direction of banning the use of gas stoves, or do you think it is something where we can move? I don't want to say slowly, but a bit more judiciously, where you just start banning perhaps new construction of homes and the use of natural gas, or do you think this needs to be the government's reaction needs to be faster and swifter?
Well, government reaction will be slow no matter what because of the power of the natural gas industry. So I am under no illusion that any of these will be implemented quickly. I think definitely banning it in new construction or in remodels would be a good first step. And banning it in locations where sensitive people live, like nursing homes or, you know, places like that. That would also be a good move. Anything that goes in that direction would be a good move. I mean, Another way to say is banning the sale of new gas stoves maybe would be a little better, because then basically no new ones are being installed, so that would be a little more aggressive maybe. That. But yeah, all of those would be good steps.
And besides the environmental calls, concerns, obviously, that is obviously being debated, continues to be debated in regards to the use of natural gas, extraction of natural gas. But for you, this is a wake-up call because it is specific to health as well. I mean, this is a clear, probably one of the more clear studies in your mind that really speak to the public and its health and the use of natural gas and its impact on people.
Yes, and it's not just a study. There is many studies that have accumulated by now, and I would say, yeah, the health is more immediate. You know, the climate. We should also stop using natural gas and other fossil fuels completely as fast as we can across society, due to climate reasons. But you know, that's slower, and that involves larger changes. But getting rid of gas stoves is something that's more within reach, and that will have this enormous benefit for the health of people.
Mm-hmm. Professor, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That is Professor Jose Luis Jimenez. He's a distinguished professor at the School of Chemistry and the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences at the University of Colorado. At Boulder, he, of course, was talking about a study that came out, that was completed in December of 22, just last month, 2022, by the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, which basically found that indoor gas stove usage is associated with an increased risk of current asthma among children. The study found that almost 13%, imagine that, 13% of current childhood asthma in the U.S. is attributable to gas stove usage. Richard Trumka, who is a commissioner with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, said all options would be on the table to regulate the appliances. Now, I want to reiterate, in fact, Mr. Trumka was on today. It's not the banning of the old natural gas, it's just that any new products potentially they may ban or look at banning. So this is a conversation. It's not happening in today or anything like that, but certainly a very interesting study that is gaining a lot of attention. Now, earlier today, my colleague Jill Bennett spoke to Dr. Men Biagtan, Vice President of Health Initiatives at the BC Lung Foundation, and talked about this issue as well. And Dr. Biagtan talked about that this issue has been looked at in Canada as well. Take a listen.
Yeah, it has been looked on in Canada as well, and there has been a growing evidence that shows that the use of gas stoves can increase levels of pollutants inside a home. Some of the initial studies have shown that people, especially the low-income group people, usually are experiencing some kind of asthma, worsening of asthma symptoms among children. And then over a lifetime, they have already found out that these kids eventually will develop, or people will develop asthma.
Now, the study, other studies have found that the stoves emit significant levels of nitrogen dioxide, carbon monoxide, and fine particulate matter. Dr. Biagtan, speaking to Jill Bennett earlier today, also said even when the stove is off, it's still dangerous. Take a listen.
Even when the gas stove is off, it's still leaking methane, a small amount of methane. And over the period of time, if the house is not well ventilated, then it can accumulate to high levels of pollutants inside the home, particularly nitrogen dioxide.
That was Dr. Men Biagtan. So what do you think about all this? I know certainly when we talk to local officials over the past 5-7 years, there's been a talk about banning natural gas in Vancouver. Some of it was political rhetoric. I think 52% of homes here in British Columbia rely, when it comes to principal household energy sources. In Alberta, natural gas is 77%. In BC, it's 52%, slightly higher than 49% in Manitoba, but a significant amount nevertheless. But there's been talk about banning the use of natural gas, perhaps in new appliances, new buildings as well. today, members of Congress are demanding that ESPN, yes, the sports network, log out of its relationship with TikTok after the Chinese social media giant sponsored the halftime shows on recent college football bowl games. Now, in a letter to the network, Representatives Mike Gallagher, who's a Republican, and Raja Krishnamurthy, who is a Democrat, write that TikTok poses a significant threat to U.S. national security, and that the sponsorship raises serious questions about ESPN's corporate decision-making. Now, meanwhile, TikTok has also inked other major sports partnerships, including deals with the National Hockey League and Major League Soccer teams as well. Now, over the past 5 weeks, nearly two dozen state governors and officials have imposed government restrictions of TikTok in their states. The bans range from prohibiting the device on government internet networks to restricting state employees from using or downloading the app on state devices. So what is TikTok? I'm sure your 10-year-old would probably explain it to you, but it's essentially a video sharing app that allows users to create and share short-form videos on any topic. The platform allows users to get creative with their content using filters and stickers and voiceovers and sound effects and background music. And if you ever go on there, you can see people singing, dancing. You can see people selling products to real estate agents, putting up their latest listings. Now, U.S. officials have said that because businesses in China are not truly independent from the government in Beijing, Chinese Communist Party officials might force TikTok to hand over data it has collected on American users, or TikTok might use the app to promote Chinese propaganda or censor material that Beijing doesn't like. Take a listen.
Okay, has anyone else noticed that your For You page has been a little too accurate lately? It hasn't been things that I'll Google or I talk about. It's been thoughts.
TikTok knows everything about us.
Hold up, don't scroll. Let me ask you something first. Can someone please explain how this algorithm works?
TikTok users often wonder how the world's fastest growing social network seems to know them so well.
TikTok's secretly listening to us while we're watching videos? I don't know.
The answer to how this app gets to know you so intimately is a highly secretive algorithm, long guarded by TikTok's China-based parent company, ByteDance.
TikTok has been so successful in terms of implementing their algorithms.
TikTok's algorithm can influence the thinking of U.S. youth.
To understand how it knows users so well, the Wall Street Journal created over 100 automated TikTok accounts, or bots, that watched hundreds of thousands of videos on the app. We also spoke to current and former executives at the company. Officially, the company says that shares, likes, follows, and what you watch all play a role in what TikTok shows you. We found that TikTok only needs one of these to figure you out: how long you linger over a piece of content. Every second you hesitate or rewatch, the app is tracking you.
I just want to quiet the noise.
Through this one powerful signal, TikTok learns your most hidden interests and emotions, and drives you deep into rabbit holes of content.
That it does, and that is why there is concern in the United States, Democratic and Republic in regards to Republican and in regards to TikTok is about. And countries like India have already banned TikTok as well. Well, our next guest in a recent column in the Toronto Sun says it's time Canada banned TikTok as well. Warren Kinsella is a Toronto-based lawyer, author, and consultant. He is a former special assistant to Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. Warren, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, my friend.
Lots to talk about here. You wrote a column just recently in regards to Canada should seriously consider banning TikTok in this country. What was the gist of your argument?
Well, I think there's a lot of people upset about TikTok. The statistics to the contrary. I mean, millions and millions of people, including millions of Canadians, are on it. But quite apart from the fact that there's been some well-founded criticism of it for, promoting unhealthy body attitudes with young people, things like that. I think one thing that a lot of people are concerned about is its proximity to the People's Republic of China. TikTok is headquartered there. The Chinese regime actually has shares and some management control over TikTok, and as BuzzFeed revealed just a few months ago, the TikTok management, the executives there, do disclose a lot of what they're doing to the Chinese regime. So, I think given the fact that it's now been documented by Canadian media, that we've got secret police agencies being set up by the Chinese regime in places like Vancouver and Toronto. We've got documented interference, as CSIS has told us, by the Chinese regime in at least the 2019 federal election campaign, where illegally Canadian Liberal Party candidates and Conservative Party candidates received money from the Chinese. Mm-hmm. Like we're entitled to be concerned. And I think, you know, if we've got this app that is just tremendously popular, possibly watching us as much as we're watching it, we need to take some steps to protect ourselves.
I think many Canadians don't realize that no matter what business you have set up in China, ultimately, they are answerable to the Communist Party of China. It doesn't matter what business you're in, what sector you're in. If you are based in China, the supremacy of the Chinese Communist Party rules over everything and anything. Do you worry, though, that if our government did decide to go forward with something similar to like India has done, you're seeing some bans on government phones in U.S. states now and at the national level as well, that it's just too popular of an app, especially with young people, that there would be pushback?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people saying, look, the horse has left the barn. Like in Canada, the projection is that 10 million people will be using the app by this time next year. That's a quarter of the country. Like in the United States, the penetration that it's had with teenagers in particular, so 13 to 17-year-olds, have admitted that they use it every single day, 70% of them. And of that group, about 12 or 15% of them are saying that they use it constantly. And, you know, people looking at it, if you don't have TikTok, and I don't, and, you know, they look at it and say, well, you know, Warren, it's kind of harmless, it's innocuous, it's, you know, people doing goofy things and dancing to videos and stuff like that. And that is true. But TikTok was designed about a decade ago to track the user. It's not just a one-way experience. It's going in both directions. So what TikTok is brilliant at doing is disclosing your likes and your dislikes, but also political leanings. And, you know, according to BuzzFeed, even where you are, there's a belief now among Western intelligence agencies that TikTok is tracking where people in the West are physically at any given moment.
Now, Warren, where do you think this conversation around TikTok fits into our broader conversation around the illegal Chinese stations here and the meddling in our elections? It seems like we need a sort of a fundamental rethink on how we address and interact with China beyond just TikTok.
We do. And, you know, this has been a debate in Canada for quite some time. And that, you know, the Trudeau government, as you know, I used to work for a Liberal prime minister, so I don't belong to the China is evil all the time school. But, you know, under Chairman Xi, China has become a global problem and a global threat, not just to us, but to, you know, democracy in the West. And so it's taken the Trudeau guys some time to get a handle on that and to adjust to the fact that, you know, Biden and others who aren't just reflexively anti-China also have a problem. So that's good. And I think that is happening. But in the case of TikTok, you know, they need to take a look at what's happening. And at least 20 states in the United States right now are saying to their employees and contractors, you can't use TikTok on one of our phones. You know, the U.S. military is saying, you can't use TikTok when you're communicating. You can't use it if you're a member of the armed forces. You know, there's other countries around the world, India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, who have done similarly, maybe not always for national security reasons, but have said, you know, you're not allowed to use it. And I guess the most telling example of all is that one country where you can't get TikTok at all, China. In China, they don't allow people to use it. So, you know, I think that we just need to, this is a sophisticated app, and we need to get sophisticated in how we deal with it.
Do you think the present administration has the backbone, not just on TikTok, but, you know, there has been conversation now in the past couple of months about being tougher with China, but do you think we can sustain that as a country? Because there's always that pressure of, from Bay Street to Vancouver's Howe Street. Like, it's still a place where we'd have to invest. We want to attract Chinese investment. That we aren't tough with China. Then let's say a similar democracy like Australia has been. That we perhaps may not yet have the will to do what's required, the heavy lifting that's required in regards to pushing back on China.
Yeah, well, the recent history has not been promising. You know, the Two Michaels case, I think, is the most dramatic example of that, and the way in which, Huawei was permitted to kind of stomp all over us and the Chinese regime. So the recent history has not been good. However, I think in recent months, the Trudeau government has taken a slightly more aggressive stance towards China. I know the Chinese probably don't lay awake at night thinking about us, but they should. And because if we're acting in concert with our allies in Western Europe and in the United States, we can have an impact. So I'm hopeful that when President Biden visits with the Prime Minister, in March of this year, just announced today, that this is going to be one of the subjects that gets addressed. I mean, Trump, for all of his faults, recognized that there were some problems with TikTok, and they were getting ready to force TikTok to divest its Chinese ownership. And it looked like that was going to happen. And then the U.S., the 2020 election interfered. So hopefully that's something that Biden and Trudeau can explore. Because we just got to take this stuff seriously. Like, it's not just videos for teenagers. This is an app who's watching us, and it's an app that's headquartered in the People's Republic of China.
Mm-hmm. Warren, thank you so much for your time today, my friend. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, my friend.
Time now to revisit our lead story today. Canada and the United States have reached a workaround deal in a dispute over the popular Nexus Trusted Traveler program. Now, as many of you know, who've been listening to this show, there's been a dispute over Nexus, which allows, of course, citizens of Canada and the United States across the border much quickly. Well, there's been a 300,000 applicant backlog, people waiting in the queue to get their application approved. It's been a huge challenge. And at its core, the problem has been that Canada and U.S. remain at odds over legal protection for U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers who work in Nexus offices in Canada. Basically, what we've been told at this particular point, that according to Canadian officials who were at a conference today, of course, with Joe Biden and the President of Mexico and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, according to Canadian officials, the workaround, it is just a workaround, ladies and gentlemen, it's not a full solution yet. The workaround will allow Canadian Nexus applicants to conduct their Canadian interview at a number of yet-to-be-announced Canadian airports. Vancouver, of course, will be one of them. Prior to a flight to the United States, when the applicant's U.S.-bound flight lands in the U.S., they would head to a U.S. Customs office to complete their American Nexus interview. It is a workaround, and we expect the government to have more for us in regards to details tomorrow. Joining me now to talk about the backlog at Nexus is Claire Newell. She is the president and founder of Travel Best Bets. Claire, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. Happy New Year, Jeff.
Happy New Year to you as well. And it is a Happy New Year to a certain degree in regards to this announcement today that at this stage says that Canada and the U.S. have reached a workaround deal around the Nexus application backlog. Your thoughts on it?
Well, it's very promising. It's been a really rough road for anyone who has an application in process. Renewals have been getting through. I've got a lot of family and friends who have gone through that process because everything stayed the same and an interview wasn't necessary. But anyone who is applying for a new one or let theirs expire and had to go, start from scratch, they've had a long, long wait. You know, we're talking about a list about 300,000 deep. And up until, this news, there's only been two Nexus offices in Canada that have opened. Both of them are in Ontario, literally just scratching the surface of this kind of problem that's been deepening and deepening over the years since they were closed.
Yeah. As we speak at this stage, it looks like the workaround will allow Canadian Nexus applicants to conduct their Canadian interview at a number of yet to be announced Canadian airports. I'm assuming Vancouver would be one.
Yes.
Prior to a flight to Vancouver. And then when the applicant's U.S. bound flight lands in the U.S., they would head to a U.S. customs office to complete their American Nexus interview. This seems like it's still incredibly frustrating and yes. burdensome, isn't it? I mean, I know this is...
It will. And especially if you have something that is scheduled in each of the offices and flights are delayed or they're, you know, they're canceled. And we've seen all of that over the winter break. It's been really rough. So it'll be interesting to see how that proceeds. But it is a cumbersome process to start with, you know, fingerprints and interviews and big application forms. It is well worth it. It's $50 for 5 years. And I absolutely swear by it. But I'm one of the people who was, you know, needing mine renewed. And mine actually happened to be up for renewal this year now, 2023, September the 7th, which is my birthday. And I actually put it in 1 year in advance for the renewal. I put it, my application back in for renewal on September 8th of 22, like literally the first day I could, Jazz.
Wow. And even like the backlog right now, I think the official numbers are 300,000 and growing. I mean, how do you get through all of this, even when the system is up and running?
Well, pre-COVID, it was still on their website saying it was going to be a 6 to 8 month process. So getting through this backlog is probably going to take at least a year. If they get through it and they hire more people quicker, I would be pleasantly surprised, but this is a very, very long wait. I just want to remind people, if you are an existing member like myself, you want to keep your membership benefits for up to another 5 years, you do have to renew your Nexus membership prior to its expiry. If you let it lapse, you're starting from scratch again.
In this case, the dispute at its core is still the ability for American officers to carry weapons on Canadian soil while they're doing the work for this Nexus program.
Well, that's what they're saying. And, you know, that's such an unfortunate thing. I don't know what they were doing pre-pandemic. But if we could just go back to that, there could be some sort of a resolution. It would be so great. But this has taken a really long time to resolve. I'm glad that there's at least some sort of... promising light at the end of the tunnel, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the actual details of this once they actually come out.
Mm-hmm. The problem itself, I mean, part of the issue, many have argued is that, look, it's a system to help both countries, travelers from both countries, but the bulk of the Nexus users are actually Canadian. And that's what surprises me, is Canada should be bending over backwards to make sure whatever needs to be done is done, because the bulk beneficiaries of this, the majority of the beneficiaries, are actually Canadians, not Americans.
Yeah, that's so true. And so I'm surprised that Canada hasn't come to some sort of a compromise quicker. And I'd be interested to know, because I actually don't, maybe you do, Jazz, is, you know, what was protocol with firearms prior?
Well,
so,
I understand the need for officers actually to carry weapons, and you see that, you know, I went through my Nexus interview. I didn't have a problem with it. It was a bit frustrating and cumbersome, and it took a long time. And I think in my case, there was a screw up in the application on their end, and it took a long time to work its way through, but it got done. And I'm glad I have it. It is incredibly convenient, as you know, and I know, many of our listeners know. But to think something of that sort, we have customs guards, we have Americans working at airports. It's an issue that should easily be dealt with. And I just can't believe they've allowed it to get to the point where you have 300,000 people in the backlog, never mind new people who also want to join the system as well. So hopefully in the next few weeks, there's some clarity on this as well. Claire, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Jazz.
It's 2023, as we all know. Happy New Year, we always like to say. And right after that, the next day, we talk about New Year's resolutions. And one of the things that we think about, of course, is the goal to lose weight, get into better shape. It's one of the things we all talk about in January of 2023. Many of us out there are committed. We decide to join a gym. But before you decide to join a gym, there's a lot to think about, because purchasing that gym membership may mean you sign up for long-term contracts. There's a lot of things to think about. Joining us now to talk a little bit about not getting ripped off when you sign those gym membership is Simone Liss. She is president of the Better Business Bureau of Mainland BC. Simone, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. So let's start with the basics first and foremost. You want to get in shape, you want to make that commitment, you're ready to go. What kind of things should people be looking out for when it comes to signing a longer-term contract with a gym?
We always want to remind people, especially when entering into an agreement, is that you are bound by what you're signing. And so in order for you to not sign up for something and then end up paying for money that you never received service for, we just want to remind you to take the time to really understand what you are signing up for. So that might be things like you go in, you check out the gym, you make sure the gym is right for you, and then you look at the contract you're signing to see what the term is, and more importantly, what happens if you decide to cancel, what kind of costs you're looking for.
And do these gyms sort of, it's kind of like a cell phone contract, do they demand a year's contract, 2 year contract, or is it still possible to sort of do a month to month?
Well, lots of gyms know that people are making resolutions right now. So there are lots of gyms with a variety of different options. Really, it's to your best interest to shop around, to do your research. Some companies will offer promotional offers to get you in the door. And then when they get you in the door, you know, some of them will, you know, let you see their equipment, let you see what the courses or classes are like. Others might put a little bit more pressure to get you to sign up right away. So I would just really encourage people, if they are taking advantage of a limited free trial or some sort of promotional opportunity, to really take advantage of it, to really explore the gym, to see what it's like, to use it as if you were using it as part of a contract and then asking if it's right for you.
I guess, I was going to say, a part of it is also just determining your own fitness goals. Like, sometimes you don't need to be at a gym. If you prefer running, you can do that in the outdoors, or there are other clubs you could be joining, other types of fitness you could be involved in. I guess that's the first question, is that, do I need a traditional gym? That's part of the conversation, an honest conversation you kind of need to have with yourself.
Absolutely. And in some cases, you might even want to get some medical advice to make sure that you're in the right shape for the kind of gym membership you're considering. So it's not just about walking into a gym and you know, suddenly you've met your goal. It's really assessing what your needs are, and really what you're going to do with the gym once you sign up. So it is taking an honest look and asking yourself, am I going to use this? When am I going to use this? And is the gym going to meet my needs?
Do you hear complaints about people being coerced, or sort of more aggressive sales tactics being used on people when it comes to a gym?
We definitely get complaints about people going into a gym facility and then not realizing that once they sign up that contract, that they're now bound to that agreement. And so that's why it's really important for you to read over the agreement and understand your rights, because, you know, when you do sign up for this type of agreement, there are some mandatory cancellation rights that you do have, but often there are some things attached to that. So, for example, you might have to move more than 30 kilometers away, for example, to be able to cancel. So you need to be aware and read over the contract to really understand it.
Mm-hmm. I guess part of the conversation is also, you know, beyond these wonderful gyms, private sector gyms, maybe look at the local rec center as well. Sometimes they can be cheaper, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they can offer you opportunities where you may not be going as consistently as you like, I guess, paying that monthly fee. Better to buy tickets where you just pay for the times that you go. That's part of it as well, I guess.
Yeah, there's lots of different options out there. And so if you can really get a sense of what you think you're going to use or how often you're going to use, I mean, part of that is really understanding yourself. If this is a brand new habit you're developing, I mean, they say that it takes 6 weeks to build and really get a habit in place. So if you've got any doubt there, then perhaps signing a 2-year agreement isn't the best option for you. Maybe it is starting off with a monthly pass and then really assessing whether or not this is going to be a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Simone, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to the Jazz Joe Hall Show podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple or Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can always listen to the Jazz Joe Hall Show live Monday to Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. on 980 CKNW and connect with me on Twitter at Jazz Joe Hall BC. Talk to you next time.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back, massive.
drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman. They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle. Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.